It's another edition of Library Guys
and Gals
Go to the Movies. I find your lack of faith disturbing.
Disclaimer, don't say we didn't warn you. This episode contains spoilers. So if you've wanted to watch this movie but haven't yet, we recommend listening to our podcast afterwards. Thanks so much. And now on to Library Gals Go to the Movies.
Hello, welcome back to another episode of Library Gals Go to the Movies. I am Via, and I am here with somebody new today.
Hi, I'm Danielle. Some of you may know me as the reigning trivia champion. Well, no, not anymore. Sorry. I'm also the Dungeon Master for the DCDL Teen Adventurers League, and I also do the Geek Fest events that we have here at the library.
Yes, so we get in lots of shenanigans together, and if you have listened to our coworker Kellen's trivia podcast, you will see that she demolishes me and all of my friends here at trivia. I am terrible at trivia. Mine's the speed of trivia. I can't, like, get it fast enough.
I like the speed, and I'm also that kind of person that just knows random things mm-hmm. about everything.
Yeah.
So I do quite well at trivia contests.
Yeah, yes, you do. That's why you were the reigning champ.
I am.
But yes, we are sadly missing Katie today, but that is okay. She actually would prefer it that way, probably, because this movie it's one of Tom Hanks's first starring roles in a movie, and she hates Tom Hanks. So she wants to be as far away from this as possible. We should watch Big next month. I should make her do that. She's very happy to not have to review this and to see his face. But we were very happy to watch this. We are going to be reviewing Mazes and Monsters, which is an 80s movie, a very early 80s movie. And it is a complete ripoff of D&D, or Dungeons and Dragons, for those of you that don't know.
Ripoff is not the word I would use. The word I would use here is travesty.
We said it was like a PSA or like an after school special.
It was, yes. Or if you're into gaming, it might be considered almost an anti-parody of the mm-hmm. 80s Satanic Panic.
Yes, that's exactly what it is. But Mazes and Monsters is basically about a group of college students who play Mazes and Monsters, which is their version of D&D. And Tom Hanks is a transfer student there, and he meets one of the girls, the only girl that's in the group playing D&D. There's only three of them, and they're looking for a fourth. Kind of like The Craft. They need their north, south, east, and west witch. So Tom Hanks is their fourth witch. But he comes in, and because she's a pretty girl, he's like, well, I used to play Mazes and Monsters, but I got kicked out of school, and I had to transfer, and so I don't play that anymore. And then she's like, but please, I'm a level 9. Bat eyelashes. And he goes, okay.
I would like, as somebody who has played D&D for 15 years, to point out that the first place this movie goes wrong is it teaches you D&D can get you girls.
Yeah.
It doesn't.
There's probably some areas, though. There's people have met, I'm sure.
I'm sure it helps with your charisma and your confidence, but does it get you girls? No.
You are the master, so you are the dungeon master, so that's why she is our expert on D&D. She is going to be our consulting person for what this movie does wrong and what this movie does right, which from what we have talked about so far before, I believe it does more things wrong.
It does a lot wrong. Yeah, it does a whole lot wrong.
But before we get into that, so he joins their D&D group and they start playing. Then one of them finds a cave nearby the college campus and he decides it'd be fun to take this a little more into the real world, and they end up sort of role-playing their D&D game in this cave, all dressed up like their own characters, and then that leads to some interesting reveals from our Tom Hanks character that we will get into in a little bit. So this starts off introducing some of our characters, and the first one it introduces is a guy named JJ, who within like the first 5 minutes of the movie wears at least 4 hats just in that short amount of time. We looked at the trivia and it said that he wears 14 different hats throughout the movie entirely. It's like they show, I think the first ones are like, he's wearing a Viking helmet or like something with like a spike on it. Maybe it's a Roman helmet.
I think it's a Roman helmet.
He wears like a construction hat, probably like a firefighter hat or something. There's a chef's hat.
There's a chef's hat. There's the old cowboy hat complete with chin strap. over the course of the movie, it's so many different hats, yeah. And I don't know if he's ever repeated a hat in the scenes.
No, I don't think he does. And he is also, he's big into theater. Like, you can just tell, like, yeah. I don't remember if they ever tell his major or whatever, but he's definitely, like, he wants to be an actor. But, yeah, this movie was not what I expected. I went in blind, and Danielle thought that was hilarious, because she found that after I was into the movie.
Yeah, it was maybe 15 minutes into the movie when you started asking all of these questions, I realized you had not done any research at all.
No.
Because when I told Via about this movie, I was like, it's a Tom Hanks movie about D&D.
So here I am thinking it's going to be like a fantasy movie, like an action fantasy movie about like a D&D story. It's going to be kind of like Legend with Tom Cruise or something like that.
Yeah.
It's not.
she was expecting, I think, what a lot of people would expect these days when you hear D&D movie.
Yeah.
Which is they go and they actually become their characters, or there's more fantasy
like the
involved.
World of Warcraft movie, but better. Much better.
That's not what this movie does. What this movie does instead is it gives you the group dynamic, and it lets you see how a table of D&D players really comes together, but then veers into the darker side of what having a table is like. But Via went into this completely blind, and it was the absolute best moment of my life when I realized what she was in for.
As low budget as this movie is, it made it much more fascinating and interesting. Like, it kept me in the whole time, because instead of being a fantasy action movie, it goes more into a psychological drama, or like, I don't know if I would say thriller, but yeah, it's like a psychological drama, because we learn that Tom Hanks's character has gone through some trauma beforehand, and this is kind of the reason he left his other school. Is apparently a long time ago, he had a younger brother, and was it his birthday was also on Halloween, or were they just having a Halloween party? I can't remember.
It's really unclear.
Okay, so they're having a Halloween party, at least, and during that Halloween party, the little brother runs away and is never seen again. And so Tom Hanks, you know, the older brother, the parents, like the whole family never finds out what happens to him. And that's really sad. That's really scary. And that apparently follows Tom Hanks's character through I always call them by their actor names because I can't remember their character names. Robbie is Tom Hanks.
Daniel is the blonde,
like pretty
DM,
boy.
DM character. And JJ is the teenager. Kate is the girl.
Is the Hermione. Because, no, so even at one point in this movie, she says that she's worried that going to the cave and stuff is going to get them expelled. And I remember you were like, okay, Hermione.
Okay.
So she is. She's our Hermione of the thing. And apparently he used Mazes and Monsters to deal with this and kind of use a little escapism, but it went too far. And we still don't find out what that is right away, but they start playing, and when they're in the cave in real life, he sees an actual monster and gets really freaked out, and it's actually a pretty decent... But, like, all the budget went into that effect.
None of the effect. It's a rubber suit. We've seen better.
Is it?
It's a rubber suit. We've definitely seen better monsters
than
Power
Rangers.
But it
had, like, glowing eyes or something.
Yeah.
Like, for the rest of the movie, like, it was the higher production aspect of the movie.
And by, but, yeah, this maybe cost $100 as opposed to the $20 everybody was getting the rest of the day.
Yes. So he sees this monster, gets really freaked out. They all come find him and everything and think he's just like really getting into his character and imagining. And that's when his character, who's a cleric?
Yes.
Yes, who's a cleric. See, I know D&D words. He...
I'm so proud of you.
Thank you. He, yes, as his character is a cleric named Pardew, and that's who he leaves the cave as that night.
I think we should probably talk as, like, why they suddenly go into the caves and decide that that's a better place to play Mazes and Monsters rather than their little, you know, shack.
They're like, supply closet, yeah, like they're playing in.
Yeah. When Robbie and Kate both start dating, this causes JJ to kind of go into a bit of a downhill spiral just because he's a 16-year-old and his friends are no longer paying attention to him.
And we debated, we think he has a crush on Kate,
we think
we're
he has
not
a
sure.
crush on Kate. So he actually goes to the caves near the college to commit suicide, which is kind of a bad way to do it.
Just kidding. kind of a, it's a very bad, yes, correct. It's a very bad thing to do.
But while he's in the caves, he realizes that this would be much better for a Mazes and Monsters scenario. And at this point, I would like to say that it stops being D&D and turns into something else entirely, which is LARPing.
Mm-hmm. Please explain the difference between role-playing in D&D and what LARPing is, and what LARPing stands for.
LARPing stands for live-action role-playing, and what it is when you and a bunch of your friends get dressed up and you get your prop swords and you go out into the middle of the field or a cave or whatever and you start hitting each other.
Do you just hit each other with your hands?
With the swords, or if you're really nerdy, you do the lightning bolt, which is just pretending you're throwing fistfuls of lightning at people.
That's what I do on a daily basis.
But there's also, you know, there's definitely more structured ways of doing it. But the main difference between a LARP and a tabletop role-playing game is where you are located and how you are playing. A tabletop role-playing game involves a map, miniatures, dice, character sheets. LARPing is far more physical, and you're actually up on your feet and acting out your roles. Tabletop is mostly just voice and miniatures and dice. Once you start involving real skeletons that you have bribed from the chemistry lab, then you're LARPing.
And she's saying this as an actual part that happens in the movie.
Yes. And I say all of this, by the way, as somebody who LARPs and plays D&D. Once you're dressed up in a cave as your character, you're LARPing.
Yeah.
But this was the 80s. We'll kind of give them that freedom to not know what that is.
And we also, as you said, it was very much a satanic panic D&D, of the D&D kind of boom.
Yeah.
Like, it got very popular at this time. So the people making this movie don't really know what D&D is. Like, they are not really doing their research very well.
I don't know. It's researched so well that it's done poorly. It's like they researched it and then they decided that's not cool enough, we're going to do something else.
Yeah.
Or there are a lot of critical research failures when it comes to Mazes and Monsters and how actual tabletop games play, but we could probably get into that later on in this.
Yes. So before we go into kind of the serious notes that happen after JJ, why don't you tell us let's start off with what did the movie do right with portraying D&D?
It does the friendship right when it comes to D&D. It does require a group of people who are fairly close and who need to interact well with one another. You can't really play a tabletop game very well if you aren't all on the same page.
Mm-hmm.
It does the dungeon mastering and the actual gameplay when they're playing very well. It's a little ridiculous that they're all crammed into their dorm room with a bunch of candles around, and I feel like that's super unsafe. But it is actually the game controller? Maze controller? Which sounds more like it'd be appropriate for a sci-fi TTRPG.
But the maze controller.
But it does do a good job of portraying kind of what it feels like to play a D&D game if you've never played a D&D game. It does the GM introducing the dungeon very well. It does the players introducing themselves very well. And then after that, I just started ranting.
Yeah. So what's the difference? Because this is actually something I don't know yet. What is the difference between a DM and a GM?
Which system you're playing?
Explain that. Explain!
Explain! So, Game Master is just kind of the overall for any tabletop RPG.
So if you're not playing Dungeons and Dragons, you're a GM.
Yeah, you can be a GM for Call of Cthulhu, you can be a GM for GURPS, you can be a GM for Pathfinder.
Okay.
Gotcha. Just GM, DM, it just kind of varies. DM isn't even D&D specific.
Okay. Yeah, I thought so.
They're very interchangeable. Game Master is just a little more broad.
General. Okay. Gotcha. Yeah, I always see those like intermix sometimes and I'm like, is that supposed to be something really different, but
no?
Okay, cool. And yeah, I do think that this movie does the kind of camaraderie really well. I think that's why it lends itself well to being a drama that's more just about people playing Mazes and Monsters. I think that, you know, adding in that whole relationship and working in what's happening with their lives and like the stresses and the struggles that people go through at that age in college, I think that lends itself really well because they're such a tight-knit group. And you can feel that. The actors do a good job with that.
Yeah, so. the actors tried, God bless them.
Oh, yeah, they did. Yeah, and they were enjoyable to watch, so that really helps. Yeah, why don't... tell us What is terrible about the portrayal of D&D with this?
I mean, you were there when we watched this together.
Yes, I was.
You immediately heard me start ranting about how the minis are too big.
Yes, that was the first thing.
The situations and scenarios that they kind of deal with don't make any sense. There's one scene where JJ, the youngest player, after he goes into the caves and he decides this is where he wants to play Mazes and Monsters from now on, he decides to trash his campaign, to trash the campaign they're already playing. And he does this by yeeting himself into a pit. And the DM just allows it and goes, okay, character's dead, game over.
You have to start over from the whole beginning.
Like that's it.
Levels gone, all skills wiped completely.
And that's just not how D&D works. First off, there's no way a good GM would just let their characters yeet themselves into a cliff. It's not like it requires a dice roll or anything like that, but the DM should at least go, are you sure you want to throw yourself into a pit of gem-encrusted spikes? Second thing, if your player is so stupid as to throw themselves into a pit of gem-encrusted spikes, that doesn't mean instant death. You've got to roll for damage. You've got to see, you know, is his body intact? Well, okay, so maybe can the other players recover the body? This is a game that has magic in it, so there's also a chance that that body can get reincarnated, especially since they were, as the game said, gem-encrusted spikes. You could probably pry a few of those off and find somebody to resurrect your dead friend. It does not mean, in any case, the end of a campaign unless that's what you've all agreed to. And even then, nobody agreed to let's yeet the player off the cliff.
Yeah, they were all really mad at him. They're like, you should know better, JJ. What are you doing?
And then there's a few more other things. Like, if a level 9 player yeets themselves off of a cliff, they don't have to start at level 1. The next town they go to, they can just meet another level 9 character. This could be a Mazes and Monsters difference than D&D, but it still makes no sense.
Mm-hmm. I was actually going to ask you about the level 9 thing, because they make it seem like it's really hardcore.
Yeah, I was going to talk about that.
It's like, when Tom Hanks is at a party and he meets Kate right before he joins the group, he brings up, you know, that he used to play a thing like Mazes and Monsters, and she's like, oh my god, me too, and she asks him what level he is, and he says 9, and she goes, oh, like, I'm level 9 too, and they sort of make it out to be like, that's like a really cool level, like, they're like really skilled people.
This is, by the way, where D&D starts sounding not cool.
Okay, perfect. So yes, please walk us through what is level 9 in comparison. Is that actually good?
There's no such... This is one of my major hiccups with this, is because level 9 player, that like they describe it, means nothing. This is kind of where you start seeing the satanic panic viewpoint of D&D come in, because it kind of gives this idea that the player character and the player are the same, and they are not. In D&D, they are never, like, everybody is at least aware that these are two separate things. The levels your character takes are not levels that you individually as a person take. So asking for a level 9 player makes no sense. Individuals don't level up. It's not like, you know, your handicap in golf or whatever. Kind of makes it imply that Mazes and Monsters requires you to hit level 9 with a character before you're allowed to be the maze controller. And that's just not how it works. In no tabletop system ever have you been required to hit a level with a certain character before you're allowed to do the game mastering. It just doesn't work like that. And so that's where I feel like it starts kind of sounding very nerdy and horrible, is when they require the level 9 before you can even start writing your own stories or campaigns or anything like that. It's just as somebody who is a lifelong DM, it's just like, oh, but that's so strange. We have Dungeon Master's Guides for a reason.
And as somebody who, all of my friends basically play D&D except me, because...
Yeah, we noticed.
Yes, I know you all noticed, and you try to get me to... So I have played one one-shot with Megan and some people. Megan's our other coworker here. She works at the Orange Branch. She probably hates that I'm going to call her out on this, but I'm going to call her out on this.
You can see Megan in both last year's Librarian's Lore and the upcoming Geek Fest Librarian's
yes.
Lore in October.
It's wonderful. And we're super excited for Geek Fest. But yeah, so she got me to play a one-off, and even that was testing my patience, because here's the thing with me with D&D. So, I love board games, I love strategy games, I love all those kind of things, but D&D is like math game disguised as a role-playing fantasy game.
Yes.
And I hate math, so that's where I was like, crap. Like, I've been suckered.
yes. For anybody who doesn't know, Dungeons & Dragons is math and a mass hallucination with your friends. That's all it is.
Yeah. And that's a joke, because we're going to go back to the movie, and the math part's not a joke. That's why I hate it. But the other part's a joke, because that does play into this movie in the we keep saying, satanic panic way. Going back to kind of the more serious parts that this movie falls into and totally kind of flips itself on its head and becomes not a fun, frolicking friend brigade of D&D playing, is, so we talked about how JJ goes to essentially commit suicide in the cave, has the idea to bring it to life. Part of Robbie's little brother who runs away, who's played by Tom Hanks, his name is Hall Jr. And Robbie, when playing Mazes and Monsters, we learn in his old school, he ends up kind of having a mental breakdown and thinking he's really his cleric character, Pardue. After leaving that school and getting some help, he manages to get better, you know, mental health and kind of get out of that mind frame and be able to be Robbie again. But in bringing, you know, and I don't know if this is, if this would all would have always happened anyway, even if they hadn't have gone to the cave and kind of done like the LARPing version. But going to this cave, we find out that, which I think we already knew this, but the monster he sees is not real. He's hallucinating it. His friends never see him actually dealing with this monster. They only hear his screaming, so they don't really know that he thinks he's really seeing it. They just think he's really into it. And so he essentially just breaks from being Robbie again and thinks he's his character. And that doesn't really go away after that. At this point in the movie, we see that Robbie actually has some undiagnosed mental health conditions. The movie does not address this part at all, which is very, very disappointing, because they could have made a much bigger statement with the movie, but it was the time. They had a very certain agenda of what they wanted to talk about, and they wanted to blame it on D&D.
Yeah.
So this is a big problematic part of the movie for us, is they could have talked about how it's possible that Robbie had some schizophrenia or, you know, a lot of different things, because we'll never fully know what all goes behind that, because they don't discuss it. But he thinks he's his character now, his D&D, his Mazes and Monsters character. And Robbie pops out a couple of times the rest of the movie. They leave, and he starts having these weird dreams where he's getting this mission and he has to go to the Great Hall. And instantly I knew, I'm like, that's his brother. Like, that's, it's all symbolism, you know.
It was the 80s, come on.
Right, you know, like, we know how it was going. We've seen this happen before. Danielle, it just happened to Danielle last week. And so he gets these dreams, and then on Halloween of that year, he's dressed up as a cleric, as Pardue, and we see him kind of shuffle through the party and leave. And he ends up kind of like disappearing into the night as well, like his brother did. So we see him kind of missing for a while, and his friends are very worried about him. And after that goes on for a bit, we switch to Robbie in New York City. And he's wandering around the streets, like, has no idea what he's doing. He runs into these two kind of thug guys that corner him in an alley, and he ends up pulling out his knife, because he, one of the traits of Pardue, his character, is that he says he only uses magic unless he's really forced into a bind where magic doesn't work and he has to use weapons, but mostly he tries to be peaceful with his dealings. So we see him try to do a magic thing to them, and of course it doesn't work because it's real, it's real life. And so the guys laugh at him, and that's when he pulls out a small knife that he has, and he ends up stabbing one of them in self-defense, but he stabs one of them. And it isn't until he actually looks at, he gets away and he looks at his knife and sees that it's covered in blood, that we get our first, like, Robbie snaps out of it and Robbie is Robbie again. So in this time, he runs to the nearest payphone, he calls, and his friends finally find out where he is. They tell him to stay where he is and they'll come get him. Does he stay where he is?
No.
Of course not. No. Because that wouldn't progress the movie.
No. And after this, after he talks to his friends, he goes back into his hallucination. And that hallucination leads him further into New York City, because he believes he has to go meet the Great Hall at the Two Towers.
And everybody in the movie thinks that that clearly is a reference to Lord of the Rings.
Yeah. And it's not until you get the view of it in New York that you realize what these towers are. He's being told to go to the World Trade Center. His friends eventually track him down, and there's this kind of chase scene where he goes up the tower to the he goes up the South Tower of the World Trade Center, and spoiler alert, he is being told to jump by the Great Hall. But his friends use the power of D&D to break Pardue out of his trance and get Robbie then to come down off of the ledge, and that's where we see Robbie kind of break down again when he realizes where he is, what he was about to do.
How far that this has gone.
And how far that...
I just keep, when you said the power of D&D, my brain just started singing Dayman from It's Always Sunny, and I was like, D&D and friendship forever.
I hate that song. You know why.
I love that song. I love that show. But yeah, this was... It was very weird. Did you remember that this part happened?
Yeah.
Okay. Because it was very weird, since I went in blind, because this movie, of course, was made before any... real big disasters, you know, happened with what we now relate with the Twin Towers. It was an unsettling moment to watch. It's kind of weird for, I'm sure, a lot of people now to just watch old movies that have them in their period.
Because
you're just like, those aren't there anymore. But to watch a movie where he goes up them and intends to jump off of them because of a hallucination is really dark. And watching it now is very dark. Yep. Because, of course, they have no context for any of this because it's in the past before it all happened.
It's 1981.
It's just so weird to think, like, they have no reference for any of this. And you said you were really curious what Tom Hanks maybe would think. Yeah. Now, which of course, you know, I mean, I don't think that it's anything like, oh, I would never do that again. Like, I mean, obviously, you know, they saved Robbie, and that was the point. You know, it wasn't trying to do anything bad. But I'm just curious, like thinking back on that, because he was also in, what did we say? He was in another movie about that, the Incredibly Loud and Dangerously Close or something like that.
The Other World.
Yeah. It's something similar to that. I might be getting the words mixed around. But yeah, it's just very interesting that not only was he in a movie that had to deal with that before we had, you know, 9/11, but to have been in one that is literally about that attack later in his career. So that is, if that's something that will bother you, definitely prepare yourself for this movie. It was more of a hard hitter than I expected, but it was after school specially done. So... not that part per se, but there are other parts where it's supposed to be serious and it is just not. So, you know, it is watchable, but that moment is very surreal.
It's very surreal, and really the whole movie it's dated. It's very
dated.
The whole movie has aged poorly and dates itself. You can tell other than it looking like it's from the 80s, other than the haircuts and everything like that, there are certain things like the World Trade Center being present, like mental health not being taken fully seriously.
Mm-hmm. Or mentioned at all because it's taboo.
Or mentioned at all, that just have aged this movie so, so poorly. It's not unwatchable, but it is unsettling sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just kind of looking back and going, but these days in 2021... we would recognize our friends having a psychotic break.
We
would recognize that maybe if he's gone somewhere and he's missing, he probably isn't missing in the caves where he played D&D. He's missing where he's experienced trauma.
Yeah. So it definitely, like I said, I was blindsided and smacked in the face by what this movie was really about, but it did not stop the entertaining side of it. It was a very interesting movie to watch. So in the end, this moment happens very, very near the end. They save Robbie. And then after that moment, they go to 3 months later. Is it 3 months?
It's after summer vacation. It's the end of summer vacation.
Okay, so like they come back from break. They've essentially graduated because the three friends are in the car and they're talking about what they're doing now and what they're about to do. Like Kate's about to publish a book.
JJ's going to go to directorial school.
Right. Okay. Kendall is going he's going to be on Baywatch or something.
No, Daniel's going to, and this is also why the movie aged is poorly. He's going to go become a video game designer, and his parents are they're treating it like that's the worst career decision he could make.
Ah, yes. When really...
In 1981, that's a great career decision.
Yeah, yeah. So they're all on their way to see Robbie, because Robbie is essentially left school for, they think, for a period. And he's just, like, at his parents' house taking care of himself. So they get there, meet his mom, and then go out into the back where he is. They go up, he turns around, they're talking to him, like, hey, how's it going? You know, they extend this period a little longer on purpose because he has a different voice when he plays Pardew, his character, and that's the voice that comes out of Robbie. There's no recollection of him being Robbie. He's completely Pardew. He's talking to them. One of the first things he says is, JJ plays a character named Freelick. Freelick, thank you. And he's like, Freelick, like, I thought you were dead. And he's like,
Freelick,
oh,
by
like,
the way, is the character that yeeted himself into the gem-encrusted pit.
That ruined the board game, and then they made them all go to the cave. So he's like, oh, I'm just thinking about, like, Lewis Carroll. And I'm like, oh, Frab just day, Freelick is alive. But yeah, so he is straight into that, and he asks them, like, oh, are you all going on a quest? And their faces just sink. They realize that Robbie's gone. The movie doesn't tell if he has those occasional breaks back into Robbie or not, or if he's just like permanently Pardew. he's not frozen chicken. He is a man. He's a cleric. But yeah, they don't really mention that, like if he's just completely all the way or if it's like occasional breaks.
It's kind of implied, like when the friends visit, you can see his mom's face be like, oh, he'll be so happy to see you. And then like she kind of waves him off and you just see the mom's face fall. So she knows.
Yeah. And also she says that he doesn't really have many friends that come around anymore.
Yeah.
And that's one of the sadder parts for me is that he asks them about going on a quest. They make their realization and they instantly are like, yes, like we're here for a quest. And they know what Robbie needs. Like, they know that to spend time with him, this is how they need to do it. They talk about how they like, role-played, they LARPed, they did whatever for the rest of the day, did all they can do. And then she says, like, that was the last time that we ever visited him.
Yeah.
And so that part was the part that really, really, you know, made me sad, because just having those two lines so close together of being like, oh, like, he has such few friends that come around, and then they're like, we're not coming back.
Yeah.
Because this happened. And, I mean, they have to do that for themselves, because what else are you really gonna do? That kind of made me think that maybe he was completely gone and didn't have any more breaks, but I don't know. Maybe they're just so few and far between. That's a rough situation to be in, and it's just it's a very sad ending.
If my friends were undergoing a psychotic break and thought they were their RP characters, I probably wouldn't encourage that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not quite the same as when somebody has Alzheimer's, and at least I was told when a family member had Alzheimer's, like, to kind of, like, yeah, just, like, talk to them about what they're talking about. Like, they're, because a lot of people say that they're, like, reliving, periods of their life and stuff like that. I don't feel like it's the same in this case. I don't feel like it's the same encouragement.
No, it's very much the 80s view of mental health.
Yeah,
which,
exactly.
Like, oh, our friend's just crazy now. We're gonna let
them be like an isolated loner that lives with their mommy forever.
Yeah, that's their drunk mom.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's all fun. But it very much also, the ending had that eye roll womp womp, like, it kept reminding me of that moment in Mean Girls when they're in gym class when he's like, don't have sex because you will get pregnant and die. And it was like that, but put D&D in it. So, and you will lose your mind or die. It was a very hard hitter point that they were making, and in a very cringy kind of cliche way. But, you know, it still had the emotions because they were good actors, you know, including Tom Hanks. The crying was kind of funny because it was very overdone. And I've seen him cry in later things and it's emotional. So it, like, was just one of those, like...
Tom, again, everybody in this cast did their best.
Yes.
But Tom Hanks really chews the scenery. He just goes at it.
And he swallows it and he goes for seconds.
It's almost a little too over the top. There's no way anybody can take him seriously, if he were actually having, like, a schizophrenia, if this were a real story, people would be like, you're definitely, like, having some kind of psychotic break. Like, let's go get you help, sweetie.
Yeah, yeah. There's I remember the one line that we both cracked up at, is he was like, Robbie, what am I doing here? It was like the... most exaggerated part ever. And we were like, we should not be laughing, but just the way that that came out.
There's one of the scenes where they're all sitting around the actual game playing Mazes and Monsters. The tiny little closet with candles. Really bad idea. Your map is made out of paper. Your miniatures are made out of paper. Why do you have open flame?
Right.
In a dorm room. You can't do that these days. There's also a scene where he's like, but I'm all out of spell points. Like, okay, so get your...
Like the most dramatic actions ever. Like they really get into their role playing. So I guess good for them. However you want to play D&D. Not everybody does that. Some people do. But yeah, like going back to some of like the funnier notes about this movie, one of our biggest questions we asked, especially when they were going into the cave, is why were they doing this sober?
That was my question,
you
actually.
You having experience, yes, in this. Do you not often play sober?
It's not that. I don't know why anybody on a college campus would be so stone cold sober.
Because even one of the things we pointed out was like JJ is 16. Is that what you said?
Yeah, he's 16.
He's a very early college student because he's apparently like a genius. So even he, when we first see the first party, is drinking.
Yeah,
like we see them at a party and we never see any of that college life again. So it is a bit odd. It's like, oh, this is a part of it.
This is also another question I have about this movie is this is JJ's party that he's hosting as a 16-year-old at a university. Where did he get the alcohol? Who is letting him have this party?
Why
are your parents?
Like, not to be that person, but why do people think he's cool? Like, why would people come to his party?
Right.
Because he play, like, especially for an 80s movie that sticks so much to stereotypes, he's an early college student, he plays D&D, and he's like, I have booze, come to my party!
Who gave this 16-year-old child alcohol?
I mean, there's an easy way to figure that, like, there's an easy way to get that as a 16-year-old, whatever. But
especially in the 80s, but
right,
come on.
But yeah, it's just, it's really funny how...
Are none of his friends going, dude, you're 16, take it easy?
Right. There's nothing in this movie that really plays up the college partying scene. It's like that movie, that scene is contained and then it's never mentioned again. So, it's pretty funny. But even the detective, like, when we get to the reasoning behind some of this case, he blames Mazes and Monsters. He says, like, the direct correlation to this is Mazes and Monsters. And the interesting thing about, also sad, but interesting thing about this movie is that based on a real event that happens where...
Disappearance.
Yes, disappearance, where a college student goes missing.
I believe it was Michigan State University. Rather than trying to actually figure out what went wrong, hang on, I have his name. James Egbert, which is the best 80s nerd name you can
come
up with.
Yes, it is.
They decided that because he played D&D, that's probably why he went missing, and no other reason.
Yeah, and this was actually based on a book that was written about that actual incident. It turns out that the kid who went missing was going down to, he didn't go to a cave near the college, he went through like their steam tunnels below the school, that's where he went, and he was going there. They kind of mixed it up in the movie and like separated these two things, but him playing D&D was a side factor for this guy. He went to the steam tunnels though to kill himself because of the pressures and the stress of college.
This should be a cautionary tale about what college does to your mental health.
Yes, it was really all focused on that, and I'm sure D&D was probably what saved him and kept him good longer, you know. So he clearly needed mental health help. So they put that in a little bit with JJ, but they brush over that part really quickly. Like it's very much coming for D&D. We try to make jokes because the movie, it is just really outdated and easy to make fun of, but there are definitely some big things about this that are dated, like we said. So in trying to make this enjoyable for people, you know, we have to add in our own flavor. But it was based on a real case, and that's the same thing they were trying to do in real life, is they were trying to create this public hysteria surrounding the kind of boom in popularity of D&D, and they thought, oh, we can put it on this kid and we can make that the reason and we can get this all shut down. And now we are in 2021 and D&D is more popular than ever and lots of people play it, all types of people.
Yeah, we are now in the D&D renaissance, really. It's absolutely fantastic to be a part of. The reasons for that renaissance have kind of come around. One, because the kids who were playing during the original 80s Satanic Panic have now had their own children and they're growing up and they're kind of sharing that hobby with them. But then also with the resurgence of YouTube and Twitch and podcasting, you don't have to play D&D anymore to get interested in D&D. You can find vegetables anywhere and just listen and experience it that way. And it's a much more genuine experience than seeing the CBS made-for-TV movie about don't go into tunnels with your friends or you'll go crazy.
This movie could have done a lot better job with its messaging, but like we said, it clearly had an agenda, and it is not an agenda that we ourselves aspire to. We are the opposite view of this agenda, which I think that a lot of people, including people involved in the movie, probably have now.
Yeah. And like, and looking back at it from a 2021 perspective as well, it's such a PSA after school special type deal that it circles right back around and becomes almost a loving parody of D&D.
Yeah, it really does.
I think this is why it's such a huge hit with all of us like D&D players that kind of know it as a cult classic, like underground film, because it's this movie that's trying to tell us your hobby is bad, you're bad for liking it, your friends are going to go insane if you keep playing it. And we're like, you're kind of making it sound awesome.
like you're the one that recommended this for the podcast, and you are a huge D&D player, so yeah, I love that it actually attracted the audience of people that love playing D&D.
And it's so bad. It's a good bad film.
Yeah, and that's what we love here.
But yeah, this movie goes all over the place. There's so many little things about D&D that it kind of like, it gives you the hint that D&D or Mazes and Monsters is like an everyday you must give over your life force to it type deal. Like at one point, the players complain that they haven't played in 3 days.
Oh my god!
And anybody who has played D&D is like, you haven't played in 3 days. We haven't played in 3 months.
When I just hear about you trying to schedule the next time you can all get together, it's insane.
I mean, maybe it was adult an life. 80s college student, but you know, as an adult now, I have to contend with 6 other people's schedules.
Yeah.
We haven't played in 3 days? Who got that kind of time?
That's amazing. You're like, that's fantastic. I feel like, you know, nerd is cool now, so D&D is played and accepted by a lot broader range of people and types of people to play, and I do feel like it's very popular for adults, but, like, teens are very into it. That's why Danielle's D&D program at the library, which is exclusively for teens.
No adults.
Yes. If you're an adult, she will kick you out, so don't try it. Like I said, it's so popular with adults now, too, that there are so many different groups that you can find or, like, places to test out trying D&D. For the first time.
You can do a pick up and play game online anytime you want.
We're going to be, yeah, having something you can watch to get some basics and some advanced stuff past that because of what they did last year with GeekFest. You'll be able to watch that.
Last year's was terrible. Don't watch last year's. Watch this year's.
So that was the warm-up, so this year's going to be fire?
Yeah.
Yeah. There's plenty of interest now, and if you do, I feel like mostly adults listen to this podcast, so if you guys have any siblings or kids that are in the teen age range and they want to get into D&D, and that would just make your nerdy heart sing, definitely, you know, reach out and get interested in the library's D&D program. Danielle is fantastic. Again, no adults. We will know. She will find you. She will Liam Neeson you.
I'll card you at the door.
No,
I'm not kidding.
Yes, so definitely, yeah, just fun for teens. It's a fantastic program. I would say that it's probably one of the more popular programs at the library, which, you know, teens need that outlet. Teens need some great programming for
absolutely.
That. Absolutely. I'm glad to hear that.
I will take your child. I will teach them to do math very quickly in their head. I will teach them how to speak in public, how to do battle tactics.
Yeah, so why don't you talk just a little bit about that? Like all of the great skills that D&D can teach.
Like, D&D is sitting around a table with your friends and basically playing pretend, except instead of going, well, you can't do that like you do when you're 6, there's a dungeon master who can arbitrate for you. So,
and
yeah,
dice rolls.
And dice rolls, which is what you hate. Playing D&D, you have to roll hundreds of dice and do all of that math very quickly because there's a monster that's going to come attack you.
And you can't just seduce everybody and win, which
you can't,
is
yeah,
what I wanted to do.
You can't just seduce everybody because you're going to actually have to see, then you got to roll the dice and see if that seduction actually works. You know, D&D teaches so many important skills, like speaking in public. Just the act of playing gives you the experience of speaking with other people, getting your ideas heard. But it also teaches you how to think critically, how to budget even, because you're rolling in treasure and gold and you've got to spend that in the world somehow. You've got to learn how to work with your team. You can't just go off and do whatever you want, be that edgy rogue.
You can, but it usually doesn't work out very well for you if you do
that. No edgy rogues. I'm sick of edgy rogues. Everybody's like, I'm a dark elf. Like, no, you're not. D&D just teaches you such lovely skills that it even teaches you how to research. You've got to look up what your character can do, and then you've got to keep track of what your character can do, and then you got to go back to the source books. Maybe that's not for everybody, but I love it, and it's definitely enhanced my life.
Even though I don't play it, I have high respect for it, and anybody that plays it, because they are smarter than I am in that area.
Or we have no life.
I mean, I did not say that.
I said that.
I think you all have a life. So I don't have a life.
I play D&D.
You are perpetuating the stereotype, Danielle. You are not helping with our movie review.
But I will say that if anybody thinks that we're going to actually summon demons, it's never happened. I've been trying for 15 years and I've never once actually summoned a demon.
Yeah, and I also think that the popularity of the, like, nostalgic 80s comeback has helped with D&D also. Like, Stranger Things clearly made D&D look awesome, because how can you not love that group of kids?
And the hunt for the Thessal Hydra is now an official adventure.
There you go. And we've got the Demogorgon, and by the way,
the Demogorgon existed first.
Yeah, yes it did. It was actually a D&D thing. I saw the
It looks nothing like the TV show. Yeah, the Mind Flayer looks nothing like what the show does.
But the fourth season trailer just dropped a couple days ago, and I'm super excited. Like, didn't show a whole lot, but it's coming next year, and that's all I need. So I'm excited. I love Stranger Things. My favorite thing in, like, one of the recent seasons was how Will was always like, guys, can't we just play D&D? And, like, everybody had, like, girlfriends and was doing other stuff now, and so it just made him really sad.
Yeah, you either play D&D or you have a girlfriend. Don't ask me how I got married, because I can't figure it out.
Wait, does she play D&D?
Callie's played, yeah.
She does play. See, it can bring people. Just don't expect it. If you're not focusing on the romance part when you're going into D&D and you're doing it because you love it, then maybe something will happen. But we can't. There are no guarantees.
There's D&D nothing, is not a dating service.
There is nothing on the books, on any of the strategy guides or anything for playing or leveling up that says that is part of it. So it's fantastic. If that's your thing, you know, get into it, look for an opportunity. I guess the other thing, like, one of the last things that we could talk about with this movie is how terrible and 80s the music is.
Oh, yeah.
It starts off with, like, this woman ballad singer doing this super slow, I don't even know, just this sappy thing that doesn't fit with the movie at all. And it reminded me of one of my other favorite Tom Hanks movies, which is Splash. Have you seen Splash?
Maybe.
It's the one where Daryl Hannah's a mermaid.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So that one also, at the very end, has, like, this song called, like, One Fine Day or something.
Yeah.
And it's when they're swimming towards, like, Atlantis or whatever when he decides to go with her. And I don't know why that became an 80s soundtrack thing, but it did. And it's terrible. And it's funny, and it pulls you out of the movie completely.
And they're not even good songs. They're all those weird poppy ballads.
Yeah. That sound, like, not even for the age range. Especially the Mazes and Monsters. Like, at least they're, like, adults in Splash. But I love Splash. I love Tom Hanks. I think 80s Tom Hanks is best Tom Hanks. So it's a good thing that Katie wasn't on this one today. So, but we will luckily have her next time. We will sadly be saying goodbye to Danielle for now. Feel free to recommend something for us again, and we can have you on again at some time. And like we always say, if you are a D&D player, or if you are a tabletop game player and you have any comments about what Danielle said, what I said, if you watch this movie and you want to make some comments on that, feel free to leave those for us at libraryguys@delawarelibrary.org. And we'd be happy to know all of your comments. Besides that, it was great having you on here.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. We will see you next time. Or we will hear you next time, I guess. Because you can't see us. It's probably a good thing today.
Yeah, probably a great thing.
We were ready.
It's also really hot in this library and we're like sweaty and gross.
Yeah. Which is the perfect setup for playing D&D, so we'll go do that now.
Yep.
All right. Bye!
Join us next time for Library Guys Go to the Movies. For more information on any of the films or digital services we've discussed, please visit DelawareLibrary.org.